It's the friendly sound of better music. This is KIXI, dial 91 AM or 96 FM, Seattle.
CBS News. The House Judiciary Committee is getting set to open its public hearings on the question of impeaching President Nixon. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The hearings will open at 1 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday with live radio and TV coverage. The opening session will be broadcast live by many of these CBS Radio Network stations. Opening statements will come from Committee Chairman Peter Rodino and from Edward Hutchinson, the ranking committee Republican. After the opening statements, the committee goes into closed sessions until the public phase of the hearings resumes May 21st. House Democratic leader Thomas O'Neill says he is certain the full House will vote on impeachment, and O'Neill says he expects that vote around August 1st. O'Neill says parts of the edited White House tapes transcripts have convinced him President Nixon is guilty of obstructing justice. The Chicago Tribune, a longtime staunch Republican newspaper, says the president should leave office either by impeachment or resignation. In an editorial for its Thursday morning editions, the Tribune says things have reached a state that Mr. Nixon's departure is best for the presidency, the country, and the free world. More news after this message.
This is Gene King for your Better Business Bureau. The Federal Truth in Lending Law is meant to help you, the customer, make informed decisions about borrowing money or buying on time, and to get the most for your money by letting you know exactly how much credit costs. Now, the two most important things to know in order to determine the cost of credit are, one, the finance charge, and two, the annual percentage rate. Now, the finance charge is the total of all charges, the interest and service or carrying charges that a creditor levies. And the law requires that this finance charge be expressed as an annual percentage rate so that you can really compare credit costs. The Truth in Lending Law does not fix interest rates or other credit charges, but it does give you a basis for comparison, you see, when you shop for money or goods on credit. Don't forget that. This has been a consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
After more than 6 years in power, Canada's Prime Minister will hand in his resignation Thursday, a result of a no-confidence vote by the Canadian Parliament. Details reported by Hal Lee in Ottawa.
The government of Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau has fallen. It fell because it failed to do enough, according to the opposition parties, to curb or roll back inflationary forces. The Prime Minister's 18-month-old government was in a precarious position from the beginning because it needed support of a minority party to retain power. For a while, it worked. Several bills upgrading pensions, reducing taxes, and providing business incentives were passed during the tenure of the government, but only because they were acceptable to the minority party, the New Democrats. The government fell because it failed to satisfy a clamor for curbs on excessive profits and failed to provide benefits to the elderly and those on fixed incomes in Canada to offset inflation in its recent budget. The Prime Minister will proceed to Government House in Ottawa, the home of the Queen's representative in Canada, the Governor General, to officially tender his government's resignation. The election could be held as early as July 8th. Al Lee for CBS News in Ottawa.
A continuing political battle over inflation is being blamed for the fall of the government in Iceland. A no-confidence motion was put forward aimed at Prime Minister Ólafur Jóhannesson, who dissolved Parliament Thursday morning and called new elections. Publisher Randolph Hearst is now offering a $50,000 reward for information leading to the safe return of his daughter, Patricia. Hearst on Wednesday told why he's offering the reward.
I want a home. I will do anything I can do to get a home. If in the process the SLA will be arrested and convicted, I'd be delighted. But mainly I want to get my daughter back. I think they're pretty well proven they're not too interested in the people. They just turn out to be a bunch of criminals. And I want my daughter away from him if I can get her. And this is one way.
Hearst's daughter was kidnapped more than 3 months ago when she was dragged out of her apartment in California on February 4th. A strong earthquake hit central Japan Thursday morning. At least one person was killed in a city about 100 miles southwest of Tokyo. There are no reports of damage in Tokyo. Now this.
Hello, this is Steve Allen.
You are? Then I must be Jane Meadows.
I hope so.
Now, do you want to tell them, darling, or shall I?
Ladies first, sweetheart. The microphone's
okay.
All yours.
Okay. Well, we have some good news. Steve and I are the honorary chairman of National Goodwill Week. That's May 5th through the 12th.
Mm-hmm. And we're very pleased to be associated with this organization.
Yes.
Because it's the number one rehabilitation facility in the country. You see, Goodwill believes in people, and its business is helping the handicapped help themselves.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Steve, with most of us these days devoting a good portion of our time combating the energy crisis, we tend to forget about the battle that handicapped people face every day just to survive.
Very true. But that's where Goodwill Industries comes in. It offers them a chance to learn a trade, earn a living, and regain their self-respect.
Yes.
Well, our time's about up, Jane, so remember, folks, be good to Goodwill.
Especially during the week of May 5th through the 12th.
The new military government of Portugal now says that government leaders ousted in the coup 13 days ago are under arrest. Prior to this, the junta said the leaders agreed to accept exile. Now they say the former right-wing leaders, including ousted Prime Minister Marcelo Caetano, are under arrest on the Portuguese island of Madeira. Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS for the Great Northwest, KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle. And now the weather outlook for Seattle, Tacoma, Everdon vicinity. A little light rain, likely late tonight and Thursday morning. A few showers with partial clearing at times tomorrow afternoon and night. Partly sunny Friday afternoon. Lows in the mid-40s, highs near 60 tomorrow, and the lower 60s Friday. Southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour tonight and tomorrow. Presently, the temperature is 50 degrees. The KIXI CBS Mystery Theater is brought to you in part by your friendly Tradewell store.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to another hour of mystery and suspense. To a terrifying experiment in supernatural power. An experiment by a retired scientist to direct his wife's subconscious mind to shoot him. She is lying on her back in the dark bedroom. He is in his study, concentrating, transmitting by mental energy his instructions.
In the night table, Ellen. In the night table, the gun. Pick up the gun, Helen. Pick up the gun. Now leave the bedroom. And come to my study, Helen. My study. Come to my study. Point the gun at me, Helen. At me. Point the gun, Helen. Now, pull the trigger. Pull the trigger.
Drama, The Breaking Point, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Hank Warner and stars Roger DeCoven. It is sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal, and by new sugar-free Diet 7-Up. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
And now another story of the ball and chain as Kellogg's Special K presents Veronica and Jeff.
Jeffrey, isn't this romantic? Out in a quiet lake at night with you rowing the boat.
Yes, Veronica, it's really neat.
Jeffrey, what was that?
Frogs.
Frogs that go bonk?
They're pretty weird frogs.
Oh, Jeffrey, you're such a car. You have a ball and chain, like the ones they use in those Special K commercials.
Yes, Veronica, it symbolizes my few pounds of extra weight. But I'm going to get rid of it.
How?
By exercising. You know, like rowing this boat and eating smart at every meal, starting with a Special K breakfast.
You mean a 1 ounce bowl of high-protein Special K, 4 ounces of skim milk, orange juice, and coffee?
Precisely. It's less than 240 calories, and it tastes delicious. It'll help me get rid of this ball and chain.
I'll help, too, Jeff. After all, we're all in the same boat.
You have a ball and chain, too.
Your happy ending could begin with a Special K breakfast from Kellogg's.
When you shop at your friendly Tradewell store, there's never any mystery about the values you receive. Tradewell offers the best food, the best selection, the best service, and at the best possible price. So don't be mystified about shopping for food. Shop at your friendly Tradewell store and stretch your food dollar without sacrificing quality. Here are some outstanding values this week at your friendly Tradewell. Boneless beef cross rib roast, USDA, prime or choice, $1.29 a pound. Banquet frozen meat pies, chicken, tuna, turkey, or beef. 8-ounce packages, 5 for $1. Standby California strawberries, 3 cups for $1. Shop Tradewell for quality with economy. Tradewell is headquarters for USDA prime beef.
Come, ride with me in this ambulance, speeding through the midnight fog, across the Golden Gate Bridge to St. Francis Hospital in downtown San Francisco, as the trauma emergency team tries with plasma and oxygen to keep critically wounded Professor William Baker alive. The driver and the two doctors know that the patient must get to the operating room in minutes. Now, quickly, up this hospital corridor, as the patient is wheeled into the operating room, stand outside the door and listen as they try to save him. And maybe you'll learn what Professor Baker tried to learn about the dark mystery of life and death.
Scalpel. Clamp.
The patient's failing, Doctor.
Blood pressure?
62 over 40.
Adrenaline. I can hear them trying to save me, but I'm going to die. And I want you to know that I'm dying all because I made my wife murder me. Yes, I am dying because I conducted an experiment to influence my wife's subconscious mind to the point where she was going to murder me. Listen. Listen carefully. I will tell you exactly what happened. And when I have completed what I desire to communicate, go to the police. Tell them, if you dare. I say dare, for it will require courage. It began this afternoon when Dr. Philip Simpson, the brilliant young brain surgeon, drove up in his station wagon from Palo Alto to address the San Francisco Medical Society and spend the night with us at the cottage Helen, my wife, and I had rented in the wooded hillside just across the Golden Gate Bridge, overlooking the ocean. He brought Chichi, one of two Capuchin monkeys he kept under observation in his research laboratory. It's good to see you, Philip.
It's so good to see you, Professor Baker.
So, that's Chichi.
Yes, he wants to get out. Quiet down, Chichi. Come on, you can come out.
Hello, Chichi. Oh, you want to shake hands, too? Of course. Welcome, Chichi.
Very affectionate. Astounding talent for mimicry.
Oh, dear.
Get off Professor Baker's shoulder, Chichi. Come on down. He likes your hat. No, Chichi. No. All right, now you've tried it on, give it back.
Oh, thank you, Chichi.
He gets tired of wearing his black skullcap. Chichi, let go of my hand. You go on by yourself. He's always curious about new surroundings. Probably wants to explore that grove of trees. Well, go on, Chichi. He won't go far. He'll play for a while and come back. Beautiful place you have here, Professor Baker. Is Helen home?
Oh, she'll be back shortly. Had some shopping in the village. She just had to have abalone for you. She remembered how much you enjoy abalone steak.
Wonderful, wonderful. How is she? You and Helen certainly could not have found a lovelier place for retirement.
It is rather isolated, but then it does have that increasingly rare commodity, peace and quiet. Let's walk around back.
Just beautiful. This view.
How about a cocktail?
Well, why don't we wait for Helen?
Well, she ought to be back any minute. We usually have our evening cocktail in the study. Gets foggy on the patio towards sundown. What about Chi-Chi?
He'll be all right. He'll open the patio door if it's left unlocked. Gets hysterical if he thinks he's been locked up.
Still like dry Manhattans?
Perfect. Did you tell Helen that you had asked me to bring Chi-Chi?
I intended to. Slipped my mind. Here you
are. Ah, thank you. Well, cheers. That's good as ever. I hope Helen won't be upset.
I'm sure she won't. I rather think she'll be intrigued with the idea of having Chi-Chi here for our experiments.
What, you mean she's working with you on the research?
Oh, yes. She's very cooperative. Finds it lots of fun.
Well, that is interesting. Is she as intrigued as you seem to be with psychic studies?
Well, frankly, I don't believe so. She's been very cooperative, but I don't think she really approves.
Oh?
Sometimes I question the wisdom of having married at my age.
Oh, come on now.
I remind you, Philip, Helen is 20 years younger. I sometimes have the feeling she feels trapped. Misses the activities of faculty wives she so enjoyed in the years before my retirement. Perhaps we'd had children. Philip, Helen should have married you when you were both graduate students.
Well, there's nothing happened between you.
No, Philip, not yet, but...
Well, don't tell me that you, Professor Baker, an eminent physicist for 40 years, with worldwide reputation for scientific integrity, has succumbed to clairvoyance?
And you, Philip, do you have irrefutable proof that clairvoyance does not ever exist? Can you issue an assurance that something will not happen? Well, that's Helen now.
No.
Philip! Philip!
Hello, Helen.
As I look back now to that moment when Dr. Simpson and I waited for Helen to come into the house, I fully realize that the quick flush that passed over his tense face meant the one thing I had been blind to, that he was still in love with her. Helen entered the room with packages in her arms. She threw them on the sofa, rushed towards him, her face glowing with pleasure, embraced him and kissed his cheek, hugged him.
Oh, Philip, it's so good to see you.
Good to see you.
Oh, let me look at you. So good to see you.
Neither one of them saw Chi-Chi open the door from the garden, come into the room, climb a table, and spring onto her shoulder, its furry paws around her neck.
Chi-Chi! Come down, Chi-Chi. Let go of her. Come down. There, now stay down.
It's a monkey. Oh, I couldn't imagine what... All I saw and felt were hairy paws.
That's all right, Chi-Chi. It's all right. Now just be quiet. I'm so sorry he scared you, Helen. He was trying to be affectionate.
Yeah, well, I sure can do with a drink.
Here you are, dear.
Thank you. He is cute, but why the black skull cap?
Well, you might say aesthetic reasons.
Aesthetic?
Or cosmetic. Philip doesn't like his little wards running around in public with their brains exposed.
Brains exposed?
Yes, that's right, Helen. The skull cap covers Chi-Chi's plastic skull. Now, I'll show you. There you are.
Well, you can see its brain. It's positively fascinating. Almost unbelievable. Oh, Philip, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant surgery.
Wait a minute, Helen. I'm just carrying on what was begun in 1948 at the Naval Medical Research Institute in Bethesda, Maryland.
Really? I had no idea such surgery was possible that far back.
Helen, my dear, there's a big gap in your knowledge of surgery. The ancient Egyptians operated on cranial bone.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Look here, Helen. Surgeons, in a series of four operations, removed cranial bone from the shaved head And when the skull healed, fitted the metal ring around the edge of the skull, sealing the joint with rosin and wax. The clear plastic skull is held in place by these six steel bolts.
Marvelous. Simply marvelous.
Oh, it's practically routine now.
Well, why was it done, Philip?
Well, to study. Through the plastic skull, as I'm still studying, the flow of blood when the monkeys are in an induced state of shock, or under the influence of anesthesia or drugs like adrenaline, histamine. And, of course, reactions to cold, hunger, diet, fear, tension, so forth. Incidentally, I'm leaving Chi-Chi here for a while.
Here?
Oh, I'm sorry, Helen. I simply forgot to tell you.
Yes, but why? I mean, why is it being left here?
What Philip is too polite to say, my dear, is that he's loaning Chi-Chi to me for extrasensory and paranormal experiments. To make my own observations. I believe he hopes to convince me that the brain, monkeys or man's, fails to respond with a measurable reaction to mental energy messages.
Exactly.
Look, I'm curious. Why must the experiment be with a monkey when a dog, a horse?
Philip understands, don't you, Philip?
Well, Helen, in the scale of intelligence among animals, the monkey has the highest ability to learn next to man.
Oh, Philip, what time is your lecture?
Well, I should be at the academy by 8.
Good. Give us enough time for another cocktail. And not have to rush through dinner. Darling, please shake up another round. I'll take these packages to the kitchen.
Well, here, let me carry them in.
Oh, well, just put them on the counter, Philip.
Mm-hmm. Anything else I can help you with? Just show me where things are. I'll help set the table. What is it, Helen? You all right?
Yes. The table.
What are you talking about? I said I'd help set the table.
Oh, well, later. Let's have our drink and talk. There's so much to catch up with, Philip. More coffee, Philip?
Yes, please.
Oh, have some more of the strawberries, Philip. And ice cream.
But just a little. Helen, what you've been telling me is hardly believable.
Well, there's no room for disbelief, Philip. There's evidence.
Evidence?
Yes. I'll get the drawings. Excuse me. Be right back. They're in the study.
I don't like it, Helen. Do you have these dizzy spells often?
Well, they've been more frequent recently.
Well, you should stop participating in such experiments. I'll talk to William.
Oh, please don't. Please.
Here we are. Philip, look at these rough line drawings. Do they suggest recognizable objects?
Well, this might be an apple, I guess. This suggests a knife. I can't see anything in this one. Meaningless lines.
Yes, that one is meaningless. Note the dates on the drawings. About a month ago, I sat at this table with three objects in my hands. An apple, a knife, and a salt shaker. Helen was stretched out on her back in the bedroom, her mind clear of any thoughts or feelings, awaiting my energy message. She could not hear me. She could only receive my thoughts, my instructions. I sent a message for her to pick up the pad and pencil on the night table. I sent an energy message, telling her I was holding an apple, a knife, and a salt shaker, and for her to draw them. She got 2 out of 3.
You ask me to accept this as evidence that you can control the actions of the mind of a person who is out of your sight, out of the sound of your voice, even physically in another place? Oh, I call it coincidence, accident.
It did happen, Philip. In many other experiments we did together, it took me months of training to achieve a state of receptivity.
Well, that's all very interesting, but I'd better soon be on my way to the academy.
I can see you're still skeptical. Can you spare 3 more minutes for another, as you say, interesting experiment now, right here, with Helen?
With Helen? I'd rather not.
I don't mind, Philip.
All right, very well.
Thank you, Helen. Lie down in the bedroom. I'll give you 2 minutes to achieve receptivity. I will repeat once more, Helen. Come back
Pick up the coffee pot and pour the coffee right on your fine lace tablecloth.
You're not going to let her...
No, this gong will stop her.
More coffee, Philip.
I really should be going.
Oh, yes, before the bridge traffic gets heavy.
Here, I'll help you carry these things to the kitchen.
He followed her into the kitchen, carrying a tray. The brilliant Dr. Simpson had been puzzled. Are you all right? He had asked her. Dr. Simpson, who recognized only the physical laws of matter, had asked, are you all right? But she wasn't all right. Dr. Simpson didn't know then what the trouble was. But late that night, when he returned from his lecture, he found out about the experiment that was underway with the loaded gun in the night table.
Well, this is a strange kind of monkey business, huh? And poor puzzled Dr. Simpson. I'm sure he never expected to find two old, respectable friends kicking the gong around. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Hello, Ms. Goldilocks here, and welcome to my professional taste-testing laboratory. Oh, Papa Bear, could you bring that case of sugar-free Diet 7-Up over here?
Another case? Ms. Goldilocks, you're drinking this sugar-free Diet 7-Up like there's no tomorrow. You can't still be taste-testing it.
Oh, no, Papa Bear. Sugar-free Diet 7-Up has already earned my seal of approval. It's fresh, light, natural. Delicious. I drink it because I love its taste. Now hurry up.
Okay, here.
Mm-hmm. This sugar-free Diet 7-Up really tastes delicious. Ladies, if you're tired of switching from one diet drink to another, take some advice from Ms. Goldilocks. Try sugar-free Diet 7-Up and you'll say, yes, this one's just right.
I'll bear witness to that, Goldie.
The Marine Corps Reserves are looking for a few good men to help keep the peace. We're looking for men who understand that nobody likes to fight, but somebody has to know how. We want men who want to see their children grow up in an age of peace. Men who will do more than wish for it. Men who will work for it. Men who don't need the draft to know there's a job to be done. Men who ask themselves what they can do for their country and do it. We're looking for a few good men to stand with the Marine Corps Reserve. No shortcuts, no compromises, no promises except one. You'll be a Marine, and you'll be ready. That's the job of a peacekeeper.
Now, clear your mind and listen with a blank mind. And maybe you will intercept the next mental radio message Professor Baker has prepared for Helen. Ready?
Helen didn't wait up for Dr. Simpson to return. I waited in the study, dark but for the small lamp on my desk. And still, except for the soft breathing of Chi-Chi asleep in the shadowy corner of the sofa, I waited and read until I could be sure that Helen was sound asleep. I unlocked my desk and took out the one notebook I kept hidden from her and made an entry. The experiment is beginning to show results. Today, Helen reacted with an unmistakable manifestation of dizziness and mental depressiveness when Dr. Simpson mentioned the word table. I am convinced that the subject has reached the stage of complete susceptibility and receptiveness. Then I continued the experiment. I stared in the direction of the bedroom door and concentrated. I shut out every sight and sound and thought until I was oblivious to everything but the task at hand. Helen, there is a gun in the night table. In the night table, Helen. In the night table, a gun, Helen. In the night table, a gun. Helen.
Professor Baker.
Yes?
What are you doing?
Experimenting.
Where's Helen?
Lying down in the bedroom. Close the door, won't you?
Professor, what is this experiment?
It's a very simple experiment. I'm trying to reach a mind. Now, if you'll excuse me. Helen, there is a gun in the night table.
Stop it! Stop!
Oh, you're shaking, Dr. Simpson.
What are you up to?
I'm simply trying to tell Helen there is a gun in the night table by her bed. And for her to...
To what?
To pick it up. Enter this room. Point the gun at me and pull the trigger.
But why? Why?
What I'm trying to determine is whether one mind can influence another by exerting mental energy to do something the subject would normally recoil from doing.
Yes, yes, go on.
In Helen's case, I'm sure that in her conscious hours, she would never even entertain the thought of shooting me. I'm trying to determine whether she can be made to do just that without her being aware that she is being impelled to do so.
Well, but why? What would it prove?
Prove? Don't you see? If one mind can control another across space, think of the power men of goodwill can exercise over evil. It will at long last give man control over the rapacious breed that makes civilization a nightmare. The evil, power-hungry men who brainwash their countrymen into one war after another.
Professor, how long has this been going on?
For weeks. Every night. You recall Helen's depressiveness this evening? When you mentioned the word table?
You mean...
Yes. The reaction. Results. My mind is beginning to control her subconscious. You witnessed it, Philip. And now, have you the scientific integrity and the courage to witness the experiment carried through? I have conditioned her to come in when the clock strikes midnight. In a few minutes now.
What do you mean, do I have the courage?
Yes. To stand by and not interfere when or if she's about to pull the trigger to kill me.
You mean the gun is loaded?
Of course it is.
But why not blank bullets?
The experiment must be carried out with all factors of reality to eliminate all possibility of interference from her extrasensory perception.
I don't understand.
Don't you see? Her extrasensory perception could signal her subconscious mind that the gun is harmless and the experiment would prove nothing.
Professor Baker, I simply cannot understand how a man like you, who's devoted 40 years to the science of physics, can suddenly... on retirement from scholastic life, devote all his time to such elusive matters as parapsychology, mental telepathy, clairvoyance, fantastic nonsense.
You sound very dogmatic for a man of science, Dr. Simpson.
With all due respect to your sincerity and your experiments, Professor Baker, the vast array of scientific knowledge still supports the theory that human behavior can be traced directly to the physical and chemical factors of the human body.
And you think Chi-Chi will convince me of that?
Precisely.
You allow for no distinction between man and the monkey?
None, none. Both are animals.
Listen to me, Philip. You've been trying to dissuade me. Oh, I'm quite aware of that. Now let me try to convince you.
All right, I'm listening.
From the time the British Society for Psychical Research was founded in 1882... right through the present worldwide experimentation to pierce the veil of the unknown, the one thing that has been missing is the willingness of scientists of unquestioned integrity to conduct their own experiments. The time has come, Philip, for researchers like you and me to settle once and for all what is or is not possible.
is or is not true in paranormality.
If I consent to witness your experiment, will you promise me that if it fails, tonight, now, you will never again experiment with Helen's mind?
Yes. But, Philip, I can see you're still afraid that the experiment will succeed and that she could shoot me. I'll put you at ease. This gong that stopped her from pouring the coffee on the table. Here, you hold it. And if you think the situation warrants, strike the gong.
Very well. Proceed.
He stood by the door of the study, one hand holding the brass gong by its silk braid, his eyes watching the clock on the mantel as it started to strike midnight. Chi-Chi, awakened by the clock and our raised voices, was nervously pacing back and forth across the top of the back of the sofa. Philip watched the door. I sensed he was prepared if Helen failed to respond to the gong. He would strike the gun out of her hand. I resumed the experiment. Pick up the gun. Come into the study, Helen. The study, Helen. Helen walked in, her eyes fixed and staring, her arms at her side, her right hand slightly behind her, Philip, mouth open, unable to utter a word, watching her. Point the gun at me. Pull the trigger. Dr. Simpson dropped the gun. Rushed to me as I slumped over the desk.
Good God.
The bullet hit my chest.
Helen! Towels, adhesive tape. It's a chest wound. Have to keep him from sucking in air.
He looked up from examining the wound. One glance told him she didn't hear or understand. He ran to the bathroom, got towels and the tape.
Helen, call an ambulance.
He moved me to the couch, pillows under my head, ripped open my shirt, pressed the towel on the wound, taped my chest to keep the pressure on the wound.
Call the ambulance, Helen.
She didn't respond. He seized the phone.
Put down the phone, Philip.
Helen. Helen, why are you pointing the gun at me? Put down the gun.
She lowered the gun to her side. He went to her. My eyes closed. I struggled against the blackness flooding my mind. I struggled as the blood trickled from my wound to listen.
Helen. Don't you hear me? Answer me. Answer me.
Why did you slap me, Philip?
Helen, do you know what you've done?
What have I done?
You've shot him.
Who?
Your husband, Professor Baker. We've got to call an ambulance, Helen. His pulse.
Will he live?
The ambulance, Helen.
He won't live, will he? I can see it in your face, Philip. He won't live.
He'll die if he doesn't get to the operating room.
I want him to die.
What did you say?
I want him to die.
Well, I must say, I'm surprised too. But then, Helen's probably like most women, not always mean what they say or say what they mean, huh? Wonder what's really on her mind. But she's in good hands, with a doctor in the house. I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
When you say Budweiser,
when you say Bud, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say. You've gone as far as you can go to get the very best.
When you say Bud, you've said the word that means you like to do it all. When you say Bud, it means you want the beer that's got a taste that's number one. When you say Bud, you tell the world you know what makes it all the way. When you say Bud, you say you care enough. King of beers, there is no other one. There's only something less.
You've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. The Veterans Administration helps people in little ways.
A veteran, let's say, is trying to get an appointment. He's filed to go to school under the GI Bill. He's not getting any money, but he's entitled. Well, what's wrong with writing a letter saying that under the law, this man is entitled to receive $220 a month for attending school on a full-time basis? Believe it or not, he can take that letter with the little job, take it to the real estate people, and because he has an additional income of $220, although he isn't receiving it, it makes his chances of getting that apartment much better. And this is what I mean about the little things. Going beyond the duty every once in a while. Just go a little bit out of your way to help someone. That's my philosophy. To me, these are little things. But big things to that person. A big thing to that person.
At VA, we try a little harder to help.
Does seem we left both Helen and Dr. Simpson in a state of shock. Not to mention our bleeding Professor Baker and that hysterical Chi-Chi. Let's rejoin them and see whether there's help for any of them.
I don't want him to die.
Listen to me, Helen. You must let me call the ambulance. Don't you see? We must. If he dies here, the police will want to know why we didn't call the ambulance.
The police?
Yes, Helen, the police will want to know.
Oh, Philip. Hold me. I'm so mixed up.
Come. Sit down. Lean back. Just try to relax. Put the gun on the floor. I'll call the hospital. This is Dr. Philip Simpson.
Yes, doctor.
I need the ambulance trauma team at once. 47 Edgecliff Road. Critical chest wound. Gunshot.
Yes, doctor. I'll put it right through.
Now, I want you to call the police, Helen.
The police?
Yes, they'll be here soon anyway. They're always alerted about requests for an ambulance. But I want you to call them for the record. It will be important at the trial. I'll get them on the phone. You talk.
Sergeant Peters.
Oh, this is Mrs. William Baker, 47 Edgecliff Road. I want to report that I just shot my husband. What will I tell them when they get here, Philip?
You don't have to answer any questions tonight. I'll have the law firm of Kendall Prentice represent you. They're specialists in forensic medicine.
The Chinese gong in the dining room.
It's Chi-Chi, imitating what I did. Chi-Chi, stop that. You hear me? Stop that. Let me have it, Chi-Chi. So come here. Drop it. Drop it. Let go of it, or I'll break your fall. Those capuchin monkeys. They want to imitate every new thing they see. Chi-Chi, go sit down in that corner. Go on, and stay there. They're intelligent, but they can be very trying. Chi-Chi is acting strangely tonight. Usually obeys a command immediately.
Well, perhaps Chi-Chi's nervous system has been affected by what's happened here. Perhaps its brain has intercepted some of William's energy messages.
Nonsense, Helen. That's impossible. I mean, Chi-Chi can sense excitement and tension in a room, but as for intercepting Professor Baker's energy messages, uh-uh. I better check his pulse. He's weak. Very weak. What's keeping that angry?
Philip! Chi-Chi's got the gun!
Chi-Chi! Chi-Chi! Let me have that gun! Now, Chi-Chi, you be a nice boy. Put the gun on the floor. Good boy, good boy. Thank you, Chi-Chi. Thank you. Now go back in the corner and please stay there. I'll
I'll put the gun in the desk. I think we both need a brandy. Would you like one, Helen? Oh,
yes, please.
Here, dear. Now, just sip it. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Helen. Did you know what you were doing when you pulled the trigger?
Well, what do you think, Philip?
I don't know what to think yet. You've got to tell me, Helen. Did you know what you were doing? You pulled the trigger after I struck the gong.
Yes, I know.
You knew? You deliberately murdered him.
Murder? I shot him because he told me to. He made me do it.
But if you knew what you were doing, the police will call it murder.
Look, I told you I knew what I was doing, but I won't tell the police.
What will you tell them?
That the experiment, the great Professor Baker's experiment, was a success.
Wait a minute. You knew about the experiment? You knew?
Yes. Every step of it. I knew about the notebook. I read every entry, every day. I knew exactly what he was up to. The police will read the notebook, and they'll understand. They'll understand.
You murdered him. Helen.
I never loved him. I was beginning to hate him.
It doesn't matter now, Helen. I prefer to conclude that you did not know what you were doing. That the experiment did unbalance your mind. I think the district attorney will accept that.
Accept what, Philip?
That when you pulled that trigger, it was insanity.
Oh, no. No, I won't be declared insane. No, no, no. Look, I'll show them the notebook. They'll understand. They'll read it in his own handwriting. How night after night, while I was asleep, he tried to make me shoot him. They'll understand. Unless you tell them differently. Unless you tell them I murdered him.
Helen, please listen to me. Try to understand what I'm telling you. The police will never believe that Professor Baker's experiment was a success. They'll call in scientists to testify that no such thing is possible. They'll suspect that you used your knowledge of the experiment to kill your husband.
Yes, but you were a witness. You can verify what happened.
Yes, but the...
You tell them that I murdered him?
No. No, oh. Helen. The only honest opinion I can give them is that your mind snapped. That day by day, the knowledge of your husband's secret experiment preyed on your mind. And you became convinced, in a moment of temporary insanity, that he really wanted you to kill him.
Will they believe that?
I hope the jury will.
Oh, help me, Philip. You must help me. I'm so tired. I'm so mixed up.
As I lay there on the couch, still, my eyes closed, aware that under the blanket, my blood was still slowly trickling into the towel, fighting against slipping off into unconsciousness. I could still hear their voices, as from a great distance.
You must help me. I'm so tired. I'm so mixed
my
up.
My poor darling.
And then I was aware of Gigi at the side of the couch, bending over me, its breath close to my face. My eyelids, heavy with weariness, lifted slightly, and through the thin slit of vision, I saw Chi-Chi's plastic skull. I could see plainly through the plastic skull the gray mass of nerve tissue of the cerebellum. And then, summoning every last bit of strength of will, I concentrated on Chi-Chi's brain. Chi-Chi, the gun... In the desk, Chi-Chi.
What have I done, Philip? To you too? It ruined your career.
Go to the desk, Chi-Chi. In the drawer, the gun. I could see its gray eyes staring at me, trying to grasp what I was telling him. And then he jumped on the desk, pulled open the drawer, and took out the gun.
Chi-Chi! Put it down, Chi-Chi!
Philip charged to the desk. Chi-Chi eluded him. Leaped to the mantle over the fireplace.
Drop the gun, Chi-Chi. Drop it!
Philip chased it all over the room. Knocked over table after table. jumped to the hanging ceiling light fixture, waving the gun playfully. Chi-Chi, point the gun at the mirror. At the mirror, Chi-Chi.
Stop it! Stop it!
Give me the gun, Chi-Chi!
At the mirror, pull the trigger.
Give me the gun, Chi-Chi!
Helen was reaching towards Chi-Chi. Chi-Chi was pointing the gun at her. I didn't want Helen to die. I summoned every last ounce of will and sent a mental message to Chi-Chi. Drop the gun, Chi-Chi. Drop the gun.
Look out, Helen!
Good Lord. Helen. Helen. Answer me.
She didn't have a chance. She was shot in the head.
Oh, Mitch, I...
You must not die, Helen. You must not die. Helen, I love you.
Chi-Chi was at the door at the garden in panic, trying to open the door, the gun still in his hand. Philip grabbed the fireless poker, swung it on Chi-Chi's plastic scarf. Glanced off and fell out of his hand.
You!
Philip picked up a chair, threw it at Chi-Chi with all the strength of his fury. It crashed through the glass. Chi-Chi jumped through the opening. Philip picked up the poker, went after Chi-Chi. I could hear Philip chasing him across the flagstones of the patio. I heard the police car. I could hear Philip shout.
Chi-Chi!
Then all was still. Deathly still. I lost consciousness until I became aware of someone talking on the telephone.
Yes, Lieutenant. Two dead. Mrs. Baker in the house and a Dr. Philip Simpson in the woods back of the house. Yeah, one bullet in each of them. John says Dr. Simpson was pretty far gone when he found him. Says he tried to tell him something. John thinks it was something about a monkey still running around out there with a loaded gun. It beats me too, Lieutenant. No, nothing else. Oh, yes, we found a black skull cap hanging on the chandelier. That's what I said, skull cap. Odd-shaped thing. Can't figure out what it's for, no. Right. Oh, better get that ambulance out here fast. Professor may still have a chance. Well, here it comes now, Lieutenant.
That's how it happened. Exactly how it happened. The police are still puzzled. Chi-Chi will probably find roaming the woods the gun somewhere nearby. Chi-Chi did it. Tell the police Chi-Chi did it. Why? Perhaps it was mimicking Helen after it witnessed her shooting me. I shall never know. As for whether my wife murdered me willfully or suffered temporary insanity or was influenced by my mental energy, you must judge for yourself after you read the full record of the experiment in the notebook. Yes. Go tell the police and Professor Seligson. You can locate him through the American Society of University Professors. Tell them I decided to communicate the foregoing just an hour ago. When I heard the operating team give me up.
And they say dead men tell no tales. Talking about the brain, though, let me give you men a tip. If your wife is trying to talk you to death, don't worry. Master the secret of mind over chatter. But seriously, a guy I know didn't even answer his wife. She threatened to divorce him because he was unsociable. So he hit her over the head with a mashie, told the jury he wanted to be clubby. I'll be back shortly.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau knows.
Hey, honey, this looks like a good deal. No payment for 3 months on easy credit terms.
But, dear, do you think we can meet the payments?
She's right, you know. Shop for credit as carefully as you shop for products.
Who are you?
I'm the man from the Better Business Bureau. And before you decide to buy anything on time, ask yourself if you can make the payments out of your regular income. How far is your credit extended now? Have you any credit or cash reserve to cover an unexpected illness or a loss of your job?
Gee, maybe I'd better think it over. Thanks for your advice.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Just another consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
A word of advice, folks. When brain fatigue threatens and mental strain upsets you, why not settle down beside your radio for another relaxing hour of suspense and adventure in the complimentary season seat reserved just for you in our Radio Mystery Theater. And oh yes, bring your friends. The seats are on the house. Our cast included Roger DeCoven, Bryna Rayburn, and Nat Polan. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Mr. Perry, I agreed to visit you in your cell on two conditions. A, it would be kept secret. B, I would do nothing that's foreign to my principles.
Of course, of course.
Mr. Perry, I find you a thoroughly despicable person.
I've heard that before.
You make your money from narcotics, gambling, extortion, and you're a murderer.
They could never prove that in court.
Till now. But it looks as if they've got you finally. They have you cold for the murder of Paul Grover.
Yeah, well, that's why I wanted to see you, Congresswoman. I thought you'd want to do the right thing.
The right thing?
Yeah. And the right thing would be for you to confess to that murder.
What did you say?
You heard me.
Why should I confess?
Because you killed Paul Grover.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Listen to Mystery Theater again tomorrow night, same time, same station. CBS and Seattle KIXI. Stay tuned for the news next.
This is KIXI, dial 91 AM, or
96 FM, Seattle.
Pacific Daylight Time, 12 midnight.
CBS News. The top Democrat in the House predicts a vote will be taken on impeachment late this summer. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. House Democratic leader Thomas O'Neill says he thinks the full House will be voting on the impeachment of President Nixon around August 1st. Public hearings on the impeachment of the president begin Thursday afternoon by the House Judiciary Committee. The opening statements will be broadcast live. The committee then goes into private sessions, and its hearings will reopen to the public May 21st. The White House tapes may play a key role in the hearings. CBS News has learned the special Watergate prosecutor's staff thinks the president started the process of taping his conversations in order to get a tax deduction. Daniel Shore reports.
Shortly before the taping started in 1971, the White House was getting advice, verbally and in memoranda, that the 69 tax law amendments banning deductions for letters, memoranda, and similar property did not appear to exclude other material like tape recordings. In July 71, with the taping already underway, the president's tax lawyer, Frank DeMarco, sent presidential counsel John Dean a memo to which CBS News has received access, saying, "Lifetime income tax savings can be obtained from certain non-paper-type memorabilia presently owned by the president." Appraiser Ralph Newman, in assessing the pre-presidential material, which Mr. Nixon sent to National Archives in 69, put a value of $94,000 on tape recordings, broadcasts, and other public events. In March 70, Newman wrote DeMarco that despite the ban on deductions for papers, the president still had a considerable amount of material in the archives, including tapes, that qualified as gifts for tax purposes. It was shortly thereafter that the idea of making new and vastly more valuable tapes was born. Alexander Butterfield, in disclosing the taping system to the Senate Watergate Committee last July, said it was done purely for historical reasons, but he couldn't explain why then it hadn't started at the beginning of the administration. "We didn't think of it at the outset of the administration," he said. "It was just a case of evolution." Daniel Shaw, CBS News, Washington.
In a strongly worded editorial in Thursday morning's editions, the Chicago Tribune urges that President Nixon leave office either by impeachment or resignation. The Tribune, which supported Mr. Nixon in the past, described the president as devious, humorless, and stripped of his essential character. More news after this message.
Hello there, world. Denny Bracken of Mike Roy's Cook Thing here.
And I'm you know who.
Now, is that a first or last name, sir?
The names will be mud if we don't get to cook it here.
Oh, all right. Well, it's Mike Roy's Cook Thing tomorrow, and what's on the menu there, chef?
Well, you know bananas.
Bananas? Yes, I know bananas.
Tomorrow we're going to bake the bananas, and we'll drive the monkeys of the world crazy.
You're going to bake bananas?
Yeah, and make them extra globby and gooky with all kinds of goodies.
All right. Super Chef unveils his baked banana tomorrow, friends, right here on the CBS Radio Network.
This is Marilyn McCoo of the Fifth Dimension with a little tale of courage. I just heard about a man who's been in a mental hospital for 7 years. Now he's out and making it on his own. It hasn't been easy learning to make his own decisions and run his own life, but he's making it. That's the kind of courage I think you're looking for in your business, Mr. Employer. Put the mentally restored to work.
Call me now. I'm working my way back to you.
New elections will take place in Canada early in July after the fall Wednesday night of the Liberal government of Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau. The Canadian House of Commons voted no confidence in the Trudeau government, rejecting Trudeau's proposed budget. Trudeau will remain Prime Minister until the elections. His budget and the inflation problem in Canada are being blamed for the vote against his government. In a nationwide broadcast, Trudeau promised Canadians will have a strong government while the current political crisis continues.
Strong government will continue in a country which is economically buoyant despite high prices, in a country which I am proud to say exhibits at every turn self-confidence and self-reliance and self-pride.
Trudeau's political enemies accused his government of doing nothing about the problems of pensioners and others on fixed incomes. Inflation is also being blamed for the fall of the government of Iceland, Prime Minister Johannesson announcing his resignation and calling new elections next month. Now this.
John Jones, statistic, born with cleft feet and cleft palate.
Shirley Smith, statistic, born blind.
Tom Kelly, statistic, born with an open spine. Statistic, children born with birth defects. 250,000 of them every year. One out of every 14 babies.
Small statistics with a whole life ahead of them.
Small statistics who cry and think and feel and want to laugh.
Why should life deny them good health at birth?
The March of Dimes leads the fight for this right.
Good health at birth. Good health at birth. Good health at birth.
Through medical service programs, public education, and scientific research.
So that one day the ultimate goal will be reached.
Prevention of all birth defects.
But birth defects are forever unless you help.
Please, will you give to the March of Dimes?
William Simon says he'll devote his efforts in his new office to fighting inflation, which Simon terms the nation's number one problem. Simon, former head of the Federal Energy Office, was sworn in Wednesday as Treasury Secretary, replacing George Shultz, who resigned. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS for the Great Northwest, KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle. The weather forecast for the Puget Sound area. A little light rain likely late tonight and tomorrow morning. A few showers with partial clearing at times tomorrow afternoon and night. Partly sunny Friday afternoon. Lows in the mid-40s, highs near 60 tomorrow, and the lower 60s on Friday. Southwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour tonight and tomorrow. 50 degrees downtown, 49 at SeaTac, barometer 29.94, and steady.
The most beautiful sound around continues now from KIXI Seattle.
Angel through eternity.